Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time, yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up and shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Well, good afternoon to another exciting adventure here on Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your hostess with the mostest, with the most cool, debonair, and handsome co-host, Cool Mike. Oh, by the way, I'm the radio chick Annie. I'm a little backwards today, aren't I?
Well, glad you identified yourself, because we never would have known. And good afternoon, everybody, for this Tuesday, April the 29th. Glad to be here. Not only on Blog Talk Radio, but Annie, aren't we on something called Kinetic Hi-Fi?
We're on Kinetic Hi-Fi. We're on live on Kinetic Hi-Fi right now, broadcasting out of Charleston, South Carolina. We are being rebroadcast on TeaPartyCommunity.com. And anyone that is on Facebook, that is ticked off with Facebook, check out TeaPartyCommunity.com. They operate just like Facebook, but without all the liberal and progressive BS and trolls. Again, TeaPartyCommunity.com. Tell them I sent you over there. We're also now on Patriot Radio Network, which is a new and up-and-coming spot. It's a Christian conservative group, and they just started broadcasting us our show at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on Tuesdays and Fridays. So we're spreading, and we're still up on Ghost Fighter Radio, as far as I know. So that means we're broadcast in 4 different markets. So
Wow. We're
there.
Well,
we're there.
It won't be long, my friend. It won't be long before I'm alone, and he's going to be doing stuff with Stephanopoulos or whatever.
Oh, good Lord, don't make
me big time and forgetting us little people. But anyway, thank you very much. Always great to be here. A lot's taken place. A lot of good feedback from last Friday's show. I don't think I got a chance to talk to you about the debate. But anyway, either way, we will continue.
No.
A week from today is the election, so I will not be with you on that day.
Okay, I'm glad you reminded me of that. A week from today, we're going to have Andy Limbaugh on, which is Rush Limbaugh's cousin, and
yeah,
he's got his own initiative up. Yeah, we've had him before. He's a fantastic, fantastic guest. We also have upcoming next month, Doug Briney. He'll be back, our country cowboy. He's out now in Tennessee. He's got a new song being released Memorial Weekend, and he's allowing us to debut it before anyone else. And half the proceeds from that new release will be going to Wounded Veterans. So we're going to have we've got a bunch of exciting shows coming up. I can't even remember half the people that are asking to come on the show because sometimes I can't keep up with it. I'm lucky if I can keep up with myself. Yeesh.
Well, just an FYI also, I think I have confirmation from three or four, maybe even five individual Liberty Movement people that are running for state representative in my state, four of them challenging incumbents. Now, talk about it's one thing to run in either an open seat or unopposed. It's another thing to challenge. So I think that's terrific, and we're, hopefully they'll join us sometime between Memorial Day and 4th of July.
And we're supposed to be having back Tim Moore, who's running for lieutenant governor here in South Carolina. Something he said or did, Huffington Post picked up, and I haven't gotten the full story yet, but I'm waiting for his office to reconfirm. They may be our guest here on Friday. I asked him to get back to me by the end of the day so I can get that show page up. So I'll let people know who's coming up and who's coming on.
Before we start the dedication, I want to throw something out. When people make a comment, people make comments, I'll mention we do a show, and we've been doing it for a few years now, actually, and people are like, well, you know, nobody listens to that. And some people may be correct, but Angela Regas is the lady she's challenging, and Angela's the one we had on Friday. Since our show, she's not only completely changed her website, but she's also fundraised, $50,000.
Wow.
She's going to tell me they didn't have someone listening and they didn't panic when Angela was beating Common Core and Medicaid expansion and Obamacare. Yeah.
No, that's true. And we've been passing that. Matter of fact, on my Facebook page, the 2 days, the day before the show and the day of the show, the Southern Sense Facebook page had over 14,000 hits.
We go.
Can you imagine that? Just by blasting out the information on that show, our Facebook page alone had 14,000 hits. And the show numbers for live listeners was close to a record high. So, yeah,
wow.
we had a blast.
Amazing.
And, yep. And
this
is
just the beginning. It is just the beginning. All the credit goes to you, too, Annie. I don't do a whole lot, but you really rocked it.
Well, again, I want to remind everyone that there is a scammer out there claiming to be a federal agent from the Veterans Affairs. He may be changing his name, but as we last knew, he was calling himself Conrad Hawkins. If anyone gets a phone call from someone claiming to be a federal agent from the Veterans Affairs and asking for personal information, confirmation of a Social Security number, date of birth, anything like that, passwords to your websites, be aware, this is a scam. Matter of fact, I had a phone call today. Someone called on the phone and saying he's with the RNC and then asking me to verify the last 4 digits of my Social Security number. I hung up. So someone thought they were going to con me and make me think they were from the Republicans National Committee, whatever it is, and ask me for my last 4 digits of my social BS. So this is going out. It's happening with the political parties. It's happening with the veterans. And the fact it's happening to these veterans is despicable. And anyone that hears about it, please report the phone calls. That said, our dedication today, originally it was starting off to just one individual. Instead, it goes to an entire Air Force crew. And we're going to queue up, Mike, if you can get the Air Force song up there. And this dedication I ended up writing up last night because I had to piece it together from various locations. And this show is dedicated to Air Force Captain Thomas Clifford Bland, Jr. and his crew of the Spirit 03. The crew of the 14-manned, a Special Operations Squadron AC-130H Spectra gunship. All crew members were killed when they were shot down during the Battle of Kafja in Kuwait while supporting Marine ground forces under fire on January 31st, 1991. It was the worst and largest loss for the Air Force during Operation Desert Storm. Despite the threat of Russian-made surface-to-air missiles, SAMs, and increasing visibility during the early morning hours on January 31, 1991, one AC-130H serial number 69-6567, whose call sign Spirit 03, opted to stay out and continue to protect the Marines under fire, trying to stop southbound Iraqi forces. Spirit 03 responded to the call from the troops and destroyed the designated target before a lone Iraqi with the Strela-2 man pad, known as a S-7 Grail, fired upon Spirit 03. The Grail is a portable, shoulder-fired, low-altitude, surface-to-air missile system with a high-explosive warhead and passive infrared homing guidance system. The SAM found its target at 0635 hours, and Spirit 03 sent out a Mayday distress call before it crashed into the Persian Gulf. Originally listed as missing in action while supporting a mission deep in enemy territory over Kuwait, Spirit 03 was found off the coast on March 6, 1991. All four crew members were designated as killed in action, KIA, after their remains were identified. All crew members were posthumously awarded the Silver Star and Purple Heart. They are Air Force Sergeant Damon V. Kahuna of San Diego, California. He is remembered on Row 1, Block 2 of the Gulf War Veterans Memorial. Air Force Staff Sergeant John P. Blessinger, 33, of Fort Walton Beach, Florida, is remembered on Row 5, Block 2 on the Gulf War Veterans Memorial. Air Force Senior Master Sergeant Paul G. Buege of Mary Esther, Florida, is remembered on Row 7, Block 3 of the Gulf War Veterans Memorial. Air Force Sergeant Barry M. Clark, 26, of Hulbert Field, Florida, he is remembered on Row 9, Block 2 of the Gulf War Veterans Memorial. Air Force Captain Arthur Galvin, 33, of Navarre, Florida, he is listed on Row 10, Block 2 of the Gulf War Veterans Memorial. Air Force Captain William D. Grimm, 28, of Hulbert Field, Florida, is remembered at Row 3, Block 1 of the Gulf War Veterans Memorial. Air Force Tech Sergeant Robert K. Hodges, 28, of Hulbert Field, also in Florida, he is remembered on Row 8, Block 1 of the Gulf War Veterans Memorial. Air Force Sergeant James B. May, the 2nd, 40, of Fort Walton Beach, Florida, is on Row 6, Block 3 of the Gulf War Veterans Memorial. Air Force Staff Sergeant John L. Altschlanger of Niceville, Florida, 28, is remembered Row 1, Block 4 on the Gulf War Veterans Memorial. Air Force Staff Sergeant Mark J. Shamous, 30, of Hulbert Field, Florida, is remembered on Row 9, Block 4 of the Gulf War Veterans Memorial. Air Force Captain Dixon L. Waters, Jr., 29, of Navarre, Florida, is remembered Row 10, Block 2 on the Gulf War Veterans Memorial. Air Force Major Paul J. Weaver, 34, of Navarre, Florida, is remembered Row 1, Block 1 on the Gulf War Veterans Memorial. And Air Force First Lieutenant, now Captain Thomas Clifford Bland, Jr., 26, of Gaithersburg, Maryland, is remembered on Row 5, Block 1 of the Gulf War Veterans Memorial. We dedicate the show to these brave men and women that we lost, these 14 heroes. And we also dedicate the show to all of the military men and women who have served, who are serving, and will serve our nation to protect our liberties and our freedoms, be they uniformed members of the military or first responders. We dedicate this song, My Name is America, by Todd.
Born in the grip of oppression, I fought. for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. When I'm attacked, I protect and defend. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I'll get stronger, and I'll rise up from the fire. Taken from others, others gave it to me. They believe in the virtues I stand for, my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt,
and you can get that free song download by going to his website, toddallenherndon.com, or just checking out YouTube. He's up there also. And speaking of Todd's, Mike, we've got a really cool Todd with us. Want to welcome aboard L. Todd Wood, author of Currency and Sugar, and you've got a new book coming out soon. Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, hey, thanks for having me back on, Ann. I appreciate it.
All right. We got people applauding in the chat room, so we got the chat room going. Want to welcome everyone over there also. And today's dedication, I don't know if you had heard any of it, but was dedicated to, I believe, people that you knew. You served in Desert Storm, and I believe you were the 16th Special Ops Unit, and these guys from Spirit 03, I believe, were the 20th Special Ops Unit?
Well, you got that backwards. I was with the 20th, and the first time around, then they were the 16th. Yeah, I was a helicopter guy. They were the gunships.
Yeah, and it was a tragedy. And, you know, unfortunately, not a lot of people remember are missing and are killed in action. And I pulled up an article which really, really had me blowing my stack. This was written by Michael Dershowitz. The Air Force had a POW MIA missing man table, and they had them take away the missing man because they had a Bible sitting on the table. Have you read about that? This was in Florida at Patrick's Air Force Base.
No, I have not read about that. Was that recently?
Yeah, this was just April 1st. And it was at Florida's Patrick Air Force Base, and they traditionally, you know, place the missing man with the copy of the Bible, and it was with the 45th Space Wing, and we, you know, likes to honor the prisoners of war.
Right.
But they had them take the table away.
That's terrible.
And
well,
I,
you know,
I,
I'm here. I hope it's not too loud, but I'm in Boise Airport. I was coming from a speaking event, and looking across the runway is about 15 A-10s, and brings back good memories of my Air Force days. So.
You ever get the itch to go back up again?
No, that's a young man's game. I'm too old for that now.
No, it's funny because there's a gentleman who's running for county council here in South Carolina, and his last name, believe it or not, is Bacon. And now he's got his all his little flyers have like the Bacon Zone on it. And he was he was Air Force. He got out. He had done about 30 years. But when 9/11 hit, he called some connections in the Pentagon and said, "Get me back in." And he ended up teaching at the military college. And he did that a second retirement. So now he's running for county council here. So, you know, I know the dedication you guys have that, you know, you served in the military and then you served the public in various ways. And, you know, God bless you guys. God bless.
Well, thank you so much. It was a long time ago.
You know, you had me speed reading Sugar last night and Currency, trying just to remember what was going on. And it's funny, a lot of things that you wrote about in Sugar are actually now happening.
Well, you know, both books are that way, and, you know, they both were very prescient. And I started writing about the debt and the military and national security consequences of the debt in Currency, you know, 3.5 years ago, and the book was published 2 years later. And then, yeah, energy and the Middle East, it's all exploding right now, and that was in Sugar, so you're right.
Are you doing a book signing tour?
I got flown out here to Idaho to do a fundraiser for a senatorial candidate. Actually, the candidate was in South Dakota, but I zipped over here to see my folks since I was out west. But how beautiful it is out here. Unbelievable.
God's country. God's country. But you are
definitely.
You do have schedules for book signing around the areas, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I did a – you know, I always, when I'm somewhere, you know, I write for Fox Business, so I was on Fox 9 TV here in Boise the other night. I do book signings. I do, you know, try to talk to the universities or any groups that are interested in discussing, you know, the debt issues, et cetera. That's kind of been my, I guess, the thing that I've harped on, just to get people to be aware of what could happen if we don't deal with our finances. And I think you're seeing that right now across the world. You know, our weakness is showing and people are taking advantage of it.
You know, it's funny because looking back over, you know, your bio and your history, you have a very, very colorful background. Now, you come from my neck of the woods now, my adopted neck of the woods, I should say, the Lowcountry, where you grew up in Savannah, just south of me. You have family and connections up in Lake Michigan area. I'm sorry, Lake Carp in Michigan. You've been through the Air Force Academy. You studied aeronautical engineering. You flew combat search and rescue in Alaska, of all places. You also were deployed to Kuwait and to Asia. And after that, you then started another career in finance and now as an author. You packed everything in such a short time.
Well, I think I'm unique in that I have the two careers or two backgrounds in the military, so I saw the threats that our country faces militarily. But then I spent, you know, almost 20 years on Wall Street trading, and that gave me a real understanding of what could happen if and how the bond market could really impact our economy and destroy our economy if we don't deal with it's just like an individual. If you run up too much debt, at some point the bank cuts you off, and then you're limited in what you can do, and that's what we're doing as a country. So you're right, I'm unique in that I have those two backgrounds, and I've tried to merge them and give a unique perspective to people, and I do that through my books, which, you know, I try to make not dry and you know, dull books, but thrillers, but that definitely have a message and discuss the subjects.
Mr. Woods, why is it that it appears, I mean, we're watching TV, and they're warning us about the debt. You listen to all these, you know, financial advisors, debt, your book, many other books, debt. Why is it we're going in more and more debt, smoking cigars, eating hot dogs, and having parties? It just seems like we're so, seems like almost nobody cares.
Well, you're right, and that's a problem, you know. I've probably said this before on your show, but this has happened before in history. I mean, the Romans did the same thing; they devalued their currency. The Spanish, the same thing. I mean, this has happened before, and our consequences will be the same if we don't deal with it. I think what you have is one party that really, you're right, does not care at all, and is just trying to get as much as they can before the lights go out. And then you have, you know, the right really not effectively dealing with the problem. I think you have the younger generation, which I'm afraid are going to have to relearn some really harsh lessons of the past. You know, I spent a lot of time in Russia and in Moscow, and they look at us and what we're doing, and they are just flabbergasted at the directions we've taken, because it didn't work for them, and they know it.
Yeah, it's true. You know, a lot of the people today take so many things for granted, and because history is not being taught truly in school, because family units are breaking down and our American lore is not being passed from parent to child, we're losing so much of what makes us uniquely American, and everyone keeps on thinking global. But global is not the answer, because it only leads to more progressivism and more socialism.
Well, you know, we have the most successful experiment ever in the history of human government, and you're right, we're destroying it, we're letting it go, it's slipping away, and I'll tell you, the one hope I had is I go to CPAC every year, and the amount of young people, conservative young people there every year is growing, and it was fantastic this year just to see the enthusiasm for conservative ideas. And, you know, that's, hopefully we can have some really strong leaders come out of that group and save the day, if you will.
Yeah, well, that's a phenomenon I'm noticing, because a lot of these kids are, once they get out of high school and they actually start to go into the job market or into, you know, college, whatever, you know, they're fresh, they're open to a lot of new ideas, and all of a sudden they're finding out they're being lied to. And I'm hearing a lot of these kids saying they lied to us. I have a friend of mine, her daughter is in her mid-20s, and she graduated high school, and she's sitting in my home and listening to me doing my usual rant, and she started questioning me. And I says, are you aware? And I'm pulling out books off the bookshelf, and I'm pulling stuff up, and I'm saying, do you know any of this? And she went from being someone that was totally brainwashing to being a liberal to being a strong conservative, and kids are finding out they were lied to.
Well, you know, I hope you're right. I mean, I spent some time at different universities, and down at Virginia Tech recently, and nothing against Virginia Tech, but the main thing I heard there not was that I want to build a company and go public or, start a business. It was, I want to go federal. I want to work for the federal government. You know, I mean, that seems to be the aspiration. And you try to talk to them and say, you know, one, that job may not be there, and two, you know, go work in the private sector, and then you can serve your country a lot better, I think. Unless you're going to military or something like that. But, it was just astounding to me what I heard.
Well, it's not a new phenomenon, because I went through college in the late 70s, and I married a Marine at the time. And 2nd Battalion 1st Mar Div was in Garden City, New York. They're still there. But they have all the civilians working over there. And a lot of them were saying, well, you know, you're married to him, you've got an automatic in, why don't you take a job with the federal? And I said, well, you know, if I want to do X, Y, Z, can I expand my horizon? Can I go beyond my job description to advance? Oh, no, that's not allowed. You're only allowed to do X amount of things. If you're assigned counting paperclips, that's what you do. And if you try to learn a new job, oh, no, that's frowned upon. And I said, well, then how do you advance? How do you expand? How do you learn?
Yep.
How do you
yep.
feel like you achieve something? And well, that's not the point. It's just the pension. And that's what we got to stop. We got to stop that mindset. And this was in the 80s, and it's still here, 30 years later.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're correct. It's really frustrating. I don't know. I guess that's why I'm trying to write these books that are entertaining, first of all, but then secondly, definitely have a message and just trying to do my small part that way. But I was quite shocked about that whole, way of looking at things. And the other thing that shocked me was they voted, most of them voted for Obama, not because they really knew his policies. It was because he paid attention to them. It was because he showed up on the campus, or Michelle Obama showed up, or Biden, and they got the picture. And I would say to them, well, what about their policies? And they told me, well, the Republicans didn't come talk to me. And that was shocking as well. So they're voting because they get paid attention to instead of what the end result will be.
Well, you know, I went on to one of the college campuses over here, right near us, the University of South Carolina, the Bluffton campus. Mm-hmm. And because I'm Tea Party, they invited me. And there were about 10 different groups. And out of the 10 different groups that showed up to talk, only two of us were conservative or Republican, me being my little lonesome self. And here all the liberals are talking and this and that, and I just kept quiet. I didn't say a word. And when it came my turn to talk, I start doing my little bit of a spiel, you know, getting out, being civilly active and being going for a government that's limited so your freedoms are protected. And people started catcall me. And I said, wait a minute.
Oh, I'm sure.
You're here for freedom of speech, but you are going to deny me my ability to speak. You invited me. I didn't ask to come.
Yeah.
So I asked just common courtesy to allow me to finish. And if you have questions, I'll take them. And that shut them up. And all I said was, I asked for courtesy. And, you know, that's we have to have the courage to go out there. I mean, it's one thing for me to sit anonymously behind a microphone and mouth off, but it's another thing to actively go into the community and say, this is what I think, this is what we can do, and this is how we approach things.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, there needs to be more of that. There definitely needs to be more outreach to the younger generation, just because a lot of them are ignorant. They don't know. They don't know history. They don't understand what's gone on in the past, what works, what doesn't. You know, there's more. I'm shocked. There's more and more stuff coming out in the media and from the universities about how communism is great and socialism is great. I mean, this has all been tried so many times before. If it was so great, you know, China wouldn't be capitalist now, or Russia, or, you know, many other places. So that to me is quite shocking. And that goes to what's coming out of our universities and the effect of the mass media, I think.
Yeah. And I proudly, and I'm wearing it right now, my Dump Lindsey Graham T-shirt that I personally designed. And I proudly, and I will wear it. I'll go out to the grocery store, and you'll have people kind of like look at you through the corner of the eye. And when I see them staring at me, I'll give a little thumbs up. And 9 times out of 10, someone else gives me another thumbs up. It's like, all right, I'm spreading the message. I'm not afraid to open my mouth. And Mike knows that. I confront my county council, and if I see something going on, I'm out there. I'm in front.
Very cool.
Oh, man.
What is it that you had mentioned CPAC, and you had mentioned the growing amount of people taking an interest in it. Why is it people say, 40 or 50 and older, or 60s and older, why is it they don't seem too concerned about it, but say a generation of newly high school, college graduates, or people in their 20s basically getting started? Why is it how is it they see it and we don't?
Well, I think there's part of us that do, obviously, but there is another part that, I'm from Connecticut, New York area, and you see it up there, and it's just really fascinating to listen to them talk. And you're right, if you try to argue, they try to shut you down or whatever, because they don't really want to hear it, you know. And I'm writing a new book about this, of why societies fail. It's called Delta, and it deals with change, and it's another thriller. But I am trying to address that. And at the end of the day, I just think it's some of it is just, I hate to use the word evil, but people are out there spreading this socialism message, and I don't know what else to call it, because it doesn't lead to anything good. So that's kind of the conclusion I've come to, is that it's something that has to be defeated at the end of the day.
Well, you know, Todd, this just reminded me, because there's a gentleman who's from Denmark. I've had him on, Mikkel Nielsen. He wrote a booklet called Manipulism, and he was talking about growing up in the social society and then having his eyes awakened. If I send it to you, it probably will give you a good outline for your book on how this occurred and what the mindset is.
Sure.
will remember to matter of fact, I'm going to make a notation of that right now to send you that that manuscript. If I can get people to network and help you, I'll do it. I don't care. Just say
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to, you know, the like I said, the first book was on the debt. The second is on energy and government corruption. And this third is really what I see is why our society is collapsing. And so I'm just trying to talk about these issues in a way that, you know, I want people to read the book all night and can't put it down. But then at the end, when they're finished, really start thinking about the subject, even if it's not really consciously.
Yeah, what really gets me is you have the elitist up there in society, those that call themselves the intellectuals and the artists and so forth, and they make all their money, all their millions, and they espouse all of this socialistic, and yet the moment their very liberties are infringed upon, they scream and yell and rant and rave. Meanwhile, we're just back there going, we told you so. So it always
Well, you're right.
Me.
You're right.
We get the, where was it, what's that director, Moore? He goes there and talks about, you know, how great medicine
Moore.
Is. Michael Moore, right, the fat pant load. Who talks about, you know, medicine in Cuba. But then, you know, when he needs to have a doctor, he goes to the best top of the line. He doesn't go to a public hospital.
Right, right. Well, you know, like I said, I spend a lot of time in Moscow, and just because I have friends there, do business there. But I got a kidney stone, and wow, that was so painful. And I ended up going to the emergency room in a local hospital, and I got to experience socialized medicine front and center. You know, I love the Russian people, but the experience was not a good one. You know, dirty, very run down, overcrowded, no toilet paper, no water you could drink. I mean, you have very sick people, and the doctors just were running around. They didn't have enough people. And that, you know, that's socialized medicine, and that's where we're headed.
Right. Well, we got a caller coming in on the line. Area code 405, you're on the air live with Southern Sense. I'm your host, Annie. Who am I speaking to?
Hi, Annie. This is Dave in Oklahoma City. Yes, and I just wanted to thank your guest there for his service to his country. I was reading the bio there, and it's most interesting in your speak of your travels to Moscow and no doubt other parts of Eastern Europe, and you're being there in New York City and international finance. I just wanted to, on health care, I think what we have seen happening is in Canada, they will cover, you know, your basic care, you know, just your basic checkup and so forth. But then we find many Canadians crossing the border for more specialized care, you know, MRIs and CAT scans and other things and specialized surgeries. They will cross Niagara Falls or wherever at the Canadian border to get the more special care in the United States. And, oh, I hear a reverb back there. And Right. And I don't know how accurate this quote is, but I think Lenin once said that the road to socialism was through health care. Now, that I don't know if that's an accurate quote or not. You might want to Google that or whatever. But it sounds pretty real to me that that would be the way to go about doing it. But wanted to say you know, you were talking about socialism and you opened the door to that. You know, the father or the founder of socialism, Karl Marx, he also coined the term capitalism. And so one could almost say that both capitalism and communism, or socialism, which is another aspect, communism being the more brutal face, are both sides of the same coin. Because I tell you, cutthroat capitalism is really not much better. And I'd like to see capitalism with a compassionate side than this free trade. trade nonsense, which basically means freely trade away your technology, manufacturers, and jobs to other countries. Free trade has never existed in the history of mankind. You can't find it anywhere, and I dare anyone to show it, and it'll say Shanghai or whatever or Hong Kong. That's not necessarily true. I have friends from Hong Kong, and they have a regulated economy somewhat, perhaps freer, but free trade has never truly existed in any society. But go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to ramble on.
Well, you touched a lot of different points there. You know, on the whole capitalistic socialism thing, I mean, yeah, where you can draw the line as to how free you want a market to work and or where you want some type of controls, that's always debatable. But I don't think there is a debate on the end result of the virtues of capitalism versus socialism or communism. I mean, it really hasn't worked. I mean, the only place it worked or has worked to some extent is, I think, you know, maybe Norway, where they have a huge pot of oil that they just siphon off money from to pay for everything. So, you know, and the Russians have discovered this. I mean, their tax rate is 15%. I don't think most Americans realize that. Their welfare is non-existent. I mean, if you're a pregnant mother with children and you lose your job, I think you get like $50-$100 a month. You know, and that's maybe going too far the other way with not really a safety net, but I tell you what, it makes them work very hard, and I argue that they're much more capitalistic than we are now. And, you know, I'm not condoning Putin and his actions. I'm just talking about the society in general. And I had a discussion with a woman there the other day in Moscow, and she said, you know, I said, what happens if you lose your job? And she said, well, that's not my problem, or that's not the government's problem, that's my problem. And I thought that was fascinating. You wouldn't hear that in the U.S.
Yeah, it's true. And if we have capitalism in its truer form, there's no perfect form to it. Because you're dealing with human nature. And no matter what...
I'm sorry about that.
That's all right. I normally get the F-18s overhead.
It adds to the program. One other a follow-up question to something that you had said. Why is it... I don't quite understand why it is crappy cronyism. If they backed away, I mean, and didn't try to control situations, whether it's labor or what have you, I mean, and less regulation from government, et cetera, they would flourish into the trillions of dollars. But it's almost like they want to control. They spend more time worrying about their preservation than they really do just the actual growth of their company, which would really, I mean, be the best protection for their success or for their existence would be to flourish financially.
Just the first part. You're talking about corporations. Is that what you were bringing up?
Yes. It seems like when we talk to the market, free market.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like the companies mm-hmm. are the ones who really are trying to avoid free markets.
Well, I mean, there's something to be said for that, sure. I mean, and there is a, I don't want to call it a problem, but it's a phenomenon where companies have gone global and, you know, they pick and choose markets where they can get the best, you know, treatment from government or whatever. And that's, you know, something that we have to deal with. I think we're struggling to deal with that now. So how that works out remains to be seen.
Well, you know, Todd, there was an item in the news today, financial news, Pfizer Pharmaceuticals, which is a U.S.-based company, because of the tax rates and the regulations here in the United States, they're looking to purchase a British pharmaceutical company and then move their headquarters over to Britain to avoid all the other American regulations and taxes and fines. So this is what's happening.
We're regulating
taxing businesses out of the United States.
I did a lot of work, almost 20 years, with offshore jurisdictions, which are really financial havens, if you will, and really tax havens. And I will say, and you know, take a step back, the OECD, or the Organization for Economic Development in Europe, has really tried to stifle competition from other jurisdictions as far as taxes are concerned. And I'm not talking tax evasion. I'm talking legal ways to avoid taxes or reduce your tax bite. And I happen to think tax competition is a very good thing because it forces our government to, I mean, we have the highest corporate tax in the world now. Again, Russia, I think, is around 10%. It's driving people away, and because we have a government that can't stop spending money, it has to have the revenue, so it's, you know, the secret is to stop spending money we don't have and reduce the size of government, get government out of the way so that we can grow the economy, and then the economy will create more tax revenue. But
yeah, you know, everyone
one party in control
on,
doesn't want to do that. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, everyone focuses on these large corporations like GM, whatever, Minnesota or whatever it is. But people forget the majority of jobs, the largest employer, are small businesses. And they're the ones that are being shut down. I've got a friend of mine. He's got a deli shop. He's got 16 employees he's had for years. And I had Congressman Mark Sanford at one of our Tea Party meetings. We had an open forum where he sat there and listened and answered questions. This poor guy was almost in tears saying, hey, listen, I've been in business for over 30 years. These employees, to me, are like family. But because of the regulations, because of the taxes, and now because of Obamacare, I'm trying to find every single corner I can cut my budget so I can keep these people employed. They depend upon me. And here's, you've got a good, solid business and community member trying to help protect jobs and his business, but being forced out. And he comes to every one of our meetings, and God bless this man. He's fighting a fight that's really difficult.
Oh, I'm sure. You know, I see that New York has got this ad campaign about how open they are for business, which is just a joke. I mean,
I laughed
a lie.
On that one.
I mean, they're the number two or three worst in the country. But yeah, you go up there, and that's another thing. You know, I traveled to Europe a lot and other places, and as the guy said, and coming back into New York, the infrastructure is just third world, as Joe Biden said. I mean, LaGuardia is, you know, JFK is getting a little better, but it's still, you know, Newark's really bad in places. The roads are potholed. I couldn't believe how bad the roads were recently when I drove back. And you go to, you land in Moscow and go through Sheremetyevo Airport or Domodedovo, and it's a gleaming metropolis of brand new facilities, and people are concerned about keeping it nice, and they're not urinating in the elevators. I mean, it's just a whole different experience, which is depressing coming back into a lot of places in the Northeast.
Oh, it's true, because I grew up in New York. I was a police officer in New York, so I've seen the dirtiest and worst of it. And I left in 2001, and recently I flew through Atlanta, and I was amazed how backwards that airport was. And I says, where's all these technologies they keep on bragging about? Why aren't they being implemented? And again, it's wasteful government.
Of course it is. I mean, the unions take all the money, and the public sector unions, I should say. And I think the Republicans actually need to start making a demarcation between public and private sector unions. And, you know, I think there's much more of a case, and I'm not a union person, but there's much more of a case for a private union than there is a public sector, in my opinion. I mean, it's just draining our government, draining our tax revenue, creating problems for our children.
Well, there's really no
having a government
union
is like having two. Yeah, well, that's like having two branches of government. Basically, the people who are the people representing the union in government? Government.
it's like having two
of the same congressmen and two same U.S. senators. I mean,
we have that everywhere.
We have that everywhere, even in your local school. I mean, it's one of the reasons there's just so much bureaucracy. I was going to point out is a lot of these departments. Whether it's the federal government or state government or even your local, many of these departments have godlike authority over we the people. It's like ridiculous. And no one even elected these people to anything. They just started to open this department, hire some employees, and give them power? Please.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you.
Oh, man. You know, you also write for Western Journalism, and I was reading some of your articles, and I was comparing to what was going on today. You know, you've got John Kerry, who gets caught on mic, you know, about Israel, saying that if we go this way, it's going to be apartheid. If we go the other way, it's going to be a two-state. What is wrong with these people? They are so locked in the same song that they don't even see that there are other solutions. And this is the worst presidency ever with Israel.
Well, Israel can no longer count on the United States. So, yeah, I'd say you're entirely right. They are on their own, at least for the next 3 years, against an Islamic jihadist state that wants to destroy them and is about to have nuclear weapons. No one is really paying attention to that. Obama, you know, and I've come to the conclusion, Obama is not a Eurocentric president. His agenda is elsewhere, and, you know, the history of the United States and our background and our ties with Europe, and, you know, he just doesn't really care about, I don't think. And I think you see that right now with what's going on in Russia. It's not something that really bothers him or, you know, that he wants to do anything about or spend political capital on. And I think it's the same with Israel. He just doesn't care about that history, doesn't care. It's the only democratic state. And, you know, I've been to Israel many times, and the striking thing you see is all the Arabs walking around free and all the mosques. And it's the only place in the Middle East where Arabs are free, and nobody will talk about that.
Yeah, and instead they say that you must, you know, have the Palestinian state. Well, heck, you know, these people can actually move into Israel, have full participation in government, walk around free, not worrying about, you know, Sharia law coming down and women or cutting off hands, because Israel won't allow that. They can live in unity, and they do live in unity in Israel, but yet people don't want to open their eyes to it. Matter of fact, you call President Obama the Manchurian president.
Yes, I did. I think he has an agenda, which we don't even know what it is. And I've come to that conclusion just looking at his actions. And, you know, the article I wrote basically said it doesn't matter if he's a wolf in sheep's clothing or not, because the results are exactly the same. If you wanted to have a president who would destroy this country, destroy our foreign policy, destroy our economy, destroy our capitalistic system, we've got it. So whether or not it's you know, some type of conspiracy, or whether it's just a guy who is incompetent, or either way, it doesn't matter, because that's what we've got.
What do you think the future lies as far as I can't actually, we obviously don't know what's going to happen. If President Obama is basically going to change things and become a dictator once another emergency happens or whatever. But where do you see, let's just take an educated guess, because as we know, you're very good in finance, and follow the money has been around since money began. Let's go to 2024 right now. Where do you see our relationship with Israel? Or do you see Israel basically being annexed by a global, where do you see that? And what do you see as our relationship with them?
Well, I think that all depends on the next 3 years. If we have another very socialistic government come in, I think Israel will have to try and defend itself at some point, and then all bets are off as to what will happen, you know, some type of global conflict or whatever. If we get which I'm hoping, if we get a reaction to all this communist crap that's been thrown at us, and we get elected a strong, you know, conservative leader who can repair some of these problems, then we can start to make progress to, you know, help our allies again. But so I think we're at a crossroads. So I know that answered your question, but that's kind of my feeling.
I did.
Yeah, actually, we've got a new website that we put up at the end of last month, and over the last 3 weeks, we've now have 49 different groups across the United States that are signing on. It's called No Rhino 2016. And it came up as a brainchild of Barbara Gonzalez at the Bayshore Tea Party up in New Jersey. And just out of the blue, she called me. And she said, well, I want to float this idea by you. And at that point, she only had 9 groups. So at the end of March, I think like around March 30th, we launched the website, norhino2016.webs.com. We've got it up on Facebook. We've got it up on Twitter. We've got it up on Tea Party Community. And every day we got more and more groups signing on and telling basically the GOP establishment, we're not taking these moderate candidates anymore. We're not taking these rhinos. And we want conservative candidates put forward. And if you don't, then we won't support you. We will go and pull the lever for independent or libertarian, whoever we feel is going to suit our purpose better. We're not going to do across the board, you know, going all the way. We're no longer doing it.
Well, yeah, I think we're at another crossroads, as you said. I mean, this is, you know, the future of the country is at stake. So that's why I've gotten so involved, and probably you, because I'd like to think my children will have the same type of, you know, environment that we've grown up in, but, you know, that's at risk. So you've got to get out there and try to change things.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Matter of fact, I'm going to put that website up in the chat room so people can also pass it around. We need more and more people to sign on because individuals can sign on to this. And if someone's a member of a Tea Party or a conservative group, tell them. Tell whoever's leading it. Check this out and sign on to it. Because we got to send a loud message. Matter of fact, I even put it up on Rance Priebus's Facebook page. Talk about having cojones. Oh, man. Hey, listen, you know, last time I talked to you, we were talking about your book, Sugar, and I never said, you know, anyone how the book ends. But when I reread it last night, I'm going, dang, when is he going to finish the story? Because I got left with the cliffhanger there, and I can't wait for you to do the next installment.
Well, the third book is a totally different book. I think people will love it, and it's a thriller, but it doesn't have the same characters. But I think Connor Murray will come back in the next book. So I've already started thinking about that.
Oh, here we go. That excites Annie right there, her pretend boyfriend there.
Well, the problem is you got to make it good, you know, and I had to rest that character for a while to make sure he could come back with a lot of action and really good ideas and a good story, and I just needed some time to put that together.
Man, I really, like I said, I sped read through it last night, and I was remembering everything that happened, and I'm glad I had it on the Kindle. But this next book, Delta, you definitely are going to have to send to me. Autographed.
Of course, of course. It should be out in the next – the e-book should be out in the next – I'm hoping the next week to 2 weeks. And then this one is coming out in hardback, and it should be out – oh, I would love to say by the end of May.
All right. Well, you have up on your website, which is ltoddwoods.com, which is up in the chat room as well as on our show page for people to go to, that they can actually pre-order the hard copy. Right.
Yeah, pre-order, and when it's released in hardback, you'll get it sent in the mail. Just make sure you tell me how you want it signed. But yeah, you can get anything on the site as far as the books are concerned. But yeah, Delta is available for pre-order. You can see the cover and the description of the book also, as to what it's about.
Do you have that number? The lady in the library for years now, she asked me, get the whatever number,
the ISBN.
ISBN number. I sent her a message a little while ago when you first joined us, and I said, hey, did you ever get this book? And she's like, I need two ISDN numbers from you.
I don't have them in front of me, but, you know, they're on Amazon. You can pull them up. Any library can order the books from their distributor. I mean, they're all available to be ordered. And any bookstore can order them as well. But, you know, obviously I'd love you to go on my website, anybody who's listening, and order a signed copy, and I'll ship them out to you.
Yeah, well, what I do is I'm pretty active in my community, the Grand Rapids Michigan Public Library in our Kent County. So I always have them order a couple copies. Whenever they see me, they know what I'm up to. But I always think that's great, too, because what I can also do is books by the so-called little guys don't get, you know, a lot of attention day in and day out on Fox or on MSNBC or ABC. But when we post the book up on the wall there, hey, this is a good read. And it interests a second person who then tells a third person.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And it's a grassroots. And I've noticed that's how in our libraries we, you know, kind of let people know what books we've read and stuff. And it's amazing how a total stranger who I don't even know will read a book I recommend or at least check it out. And then we start talking about it, and then it creates and this is something that really, really concerns me because I believe I'm not really a big Ron Paul fan. I mean, I like a lot of the things he says, but he also talked about we cannot be a superpower militarily if we collapse economically, and that's so true.
Exactly, exactly. That's what my first book was about, currency. And, you know, I think the message is starting to get through.
My brother was obsessed with that book, your first book. I think he slept with
great.
It.
Well, my, you know, it's definitely getting some notice because Fox Business has hired me. I write for them now. I've been on Hannity a few times, so it's starting to get out there. But it's a lot of hard work. And by the way, if you have any political candidates listening, I do a lot of fundraising. You know, flying around to do events and stuff. So just contact me on the website.
ltoddwood.com. You know, it was talking about being strong economically and militarily. I was talking about this article, which was published on April 22nd last week. They're talking about cutting spending in the federal government, and it angers me every single time they go straight for the jugular in the military instead of going after where there is actual honest waste. And they're talking about getting rid of all these captains and other officers that came in post 9/11 and cutting them and getting them to retire by their evaluation. And here you've got the up-and-coming leadership in the military, the future generals mm-hmm. and the future admirals, and they're cutting them. Instead of cutting the dead weight that may be at the top, or even going after other wasteful spending, such as President Obama's recent trip to New England on, Arbor Day or whatever it was? Earth Day. To plant a tree. I mean, here he flies up on Air Force One, and you're paying for one Air Force pilot and crew, one plane, one Air Force One. How many aides and staff of the executive office? How many aides and staff of the vice executive office? How many guests impress? How much Secret Service to accompany and protect all of above? How many vehicles, refreshments, ground accommodations, and staff? How much local law enforcement and local government services? How much advanced security, Secret Service detail, and local law enforcement? Transportation, fuel, accommodations. You know, happy Earth Day. How much was wasted?
Oh, yeah, I wonder what the carbon impact of that. Not that I believe in global warming, but it's funny, you know. It's humorous. And, it's hypocrisy.
And how many military salaries could have been covered by that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and anybody who thinks that it's smart right now to be reducing our military is just really not being a serious person, because I've been writing a lot about this, too. I mean, we are facing not a, you know, I'm a special operator in my past military career, but, and I'm proud of that, and I love what special ops has become and their capabilities now, but our next war is not going to be a low-intensity conflict. It's going to be a global, conventional war with ships and planes and tanks, and that's what we need to be focusing on, in my opinion. And we're talking about cutting the military.
Are we slowly evolving already into kind of a financial war? I mean, among countries undermined and some countries coming after us and vice versa?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's happening. I mean, you're seeing Russia right now talking about selling off our treasuries to hurt our bond market. I mean, I've been screaming about this for 3 years. It's happening to Japan by China. Yeah, of course we are. We're already in that phase. And the problem is we are weak. We used to train and equip to fight two wars. We no longer can fight one, you know. So that's, you know, long term. And that's what concerns me.
Yeah, we talked about just prior to China making the proposal to come away from the global currency being the U.S. dollar. And lo and behold, they've done that. You've got Iran mm-hmm. rattling the sabers. And people did mm-hmm. not even pay attention. I think it was about a year or so ago. I had Chet Nagel, another author, on, and I believe mm-hmm. he was former CIA. And we were talking about no one's paying attention to that. The fact Iran took a nuclear submarine and attempted to sail it off the coast of the United States. The very fact mm-hmm. they attempted to do that should have had us frightened. And here they go forward with their nuclear weapons. How many black market weapons are out there from the former Soviet Union, from these Middle mm-hmm. Eastern countries that have collapsed, that no one's talking about, and no one knows where they are? And we're not scared?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, we just need to be prepared, and we're losing the will to be prepared, I think, is, you know, Reagan said the best war is the one not fought. If you're too strong and people don't want to mess with you, you won't have a global conflict. I mean, and we're seeing that happen right now, because Obama won't really draw a line for Putin, so he keeps pushing it. You know, and Putin is no longer a communist. You know what he is? He's the czar. He's the new king of Russia, and he's trying to bring back not the Soviet Union, but the old Russian imperial empire. Do you know they used to own California? They used to own Alaska. And the Soviet Union is only 70 years of 1,000 years of empire. And that's what he wants back.
Yeah, it's funny, too, because no one even realizes how much China owns the United States. And I saw a map with little red flags dotted across it, and there was not a single state that China did not own substantial property. It's either a business or a property. And half the coast of California is now China. And no one's paying attention to that. They have gotten so into our economy, that we are now so interdependent upon it. And here again, we can get ourselves rid of it if we just open up our own, you know, oil reserves, the fracking, offshore drilling. And you were talking extensively in Sugar about, you know, offshore drilling and how the environmentalists are controlled by the left. And they'll put out any story to make us look bad where we can have self-sufficiency. We wouldn't need China or Russia investing in our economy.
Or the Middle East.
Or the Middle East, yeah. Petrodollars. Mm-hmm. The damage of petrodollars is amazing.
Why aren't we doing that? Why aren't we as people demanding open up some reserves? Why aren't we kicking these people in the ass?
That's a great question, you know, because I think there's some people are trying to do it, but you've got, you know, half the country who's bought into this, you know, that humans can impact the atmosphere of the Earth, which is one thing, which I think is ridiculous. And the other is that the environmental left controls this administration. I mean, it's so obvious. Look at the Keystone decision. They keep delaying until after the election, if they ever open it at all. I mean, this is, we have 300 years of energy under our feet. You know, the average poor, really poor family in poverty spends upwards of 50% of their income on energy. And, you know, whether it be fuel for their cars, heating their homes, electricity, whatever. And if we could half that bill because we have 300 years of cheap, plentiful oil under and gas under our feet, why wouldn't we do that? I mean, talk about economic stimulus. It's just ridiculous.
Absolutely, because when I left New York, one of the reasons why we decided to come to South Carolina, the cost of oil alone to heat the home was exorbitant. And then you paid on top of that all your other utilities for electricity. It was two separate bills. And then you had the car and all the taxes on the fuels in New York. And we calculated we saved something like about $600 a month by simply leaving New York State to come to South Carolina. Of course, now the increase in oil and gas kind of started to mitigate that. But, you know, we're still a heck of a lot cheaper than going back in New York. And we've got another BTR host here in on the line. Good afternoon, Thomas. You're on the air live with me and Cool Mike and our guest, L. Todd Wood. Good afternoon.
Hey, Annie. How are you? Can you hear me okay?
Absolutely, darling. You got a question?
No, actually, I have a comment because I've always heard the constant chatter about China owns the United States because the alleged amount of debt that we owe to them. Well, I read an article. It's been about 2 years now about something from, I believe it was World War I, World War II, where the United States did like loaned China the equivalent of like $800 million way back in the day. China has never paid us back. Here's the thing. The person that, when I read the article and the people that I had talked to about that, they went on to tell me that China, the interest on that is so exorbitant that it's more than, I think they said it was like multiple times China in debt. So if China tries to collapse our economy, Russia tries to collapse our economy, our bond market, like you guys are saying, the unintended consequence of those actions will be that they will collapse the entire world's economy. Because whether they realize it or not, even the dollar in the weakened state that it's in is still propping up the world economy. So that's my comment.
Well, okay, Todd, you want to add to that?
I don't know the history of the issue he's talking about, so I can't really comment on that. But as far as the dollar is concerned, it is still the best of a lot of bad choices. But the Chinese renminbi or yuan is definitely moving towards a fully convertible currency, and it remains to be seen whether it will replace the dollar as a reserve currency, because at the end of the day, governments, people, corporations, they want to hold their wealth in something that's going to retain its value, and that's really the only calculation that they look at. It doesn't matter anymore where the country is,
right.
And if we lose that status, it's going to really hurt us because we gain a lot from having a reserve currency.
Right.
How much would it help by going back to a gold standard or a precious metal standard of some sort?
Well, I think what that would do is prevent governments from printing money to buy votes to stay in power. I mean, that's what we have now. So I think that's why you have such resistance to that, because the Democrats know they couldn't print money to buy votes to stay in power. And, so that's going to take a lot of courage. I do think the currency needs to be backed by something, whether it's gold, whether it's oil, whether it's a basket of commodities, I don't know. But I think we should move towards that direction.
Yeah. Now, with Russia's rattling of the sabers over in Crimea and now the rest of Ukraine, is this the start of a Russian blitzkrieg? And one of the reasons why I ask it, my husband, his family's from Latvia. He's not a native-born American. He was born in a displaced persons camp after World War II. And he and his friends and family are all frightened, saying, if the rest of the Ukraine goes, then goes Latvia, Estonia, and Lithuania next.
Well, that is, and by the way, those are NATO countries where we have an Article 5 treaty obligation, so that we have to defend them as if we were attacked. So that is a serious, serious flashpoint, and why we don't have an armored division on the way to the Baltics to show Putin we're serious is beyond me. I think Obama sent 600 guys and he spread them across 10 countries. You know, so it's you're right, a definite trip line. You know, what happens with Ukraine? Ukraine is a really touchy situation. I can see both sides. I mean, it's part of where Slavic civilization began. I'm not excusing Putin, because I think he's using the Russian historical ties to that area as a way to gain territory and to build an empire. But that is, where Russia was born, in Kiev. And then when the Mongols invaded, the princes moved up to Moscow. So they have long-term historical ties, but I don't think we should have American troops on the ground. I mean, we should support them for democracy, but it would be like Americans Russians putting armed troops in Texas. I mean, that's how they see it. So, but the Baltics and NATO is a whole different story.
Yeah, it's funny because they were telling stories, his family was telling stories about what happened once they got their freedom from Russia back in the early 90s, and they actually went into the cemeteries and took up, unburied all of the Russian bodies, saying, this is our territory. We don't want them buried here, until finally someone stepped in and calmed down the situation. But Americans do not understand how much of a flashpoint that is. And similar things are happening in Ukraine. And
I don't think Obama understands it. Or I don't think he cares.
No. I was listening also to the Financial Today, and that every time Obama does a mismove in the Ukraine with Putin, the Russian market climbs and the value of their currency climbs too. So how much of this is to booster his economy?
He's playing a chessboard. I mean, that's what he wants to stay in power. He's a very wealthy person. He wants his friends to stay in power, and this is what all of this is about. And it's about rising nationalism to take people's eyes off the economy, because it is slowing. They have a corrupt economy. They can't modernize it. It's all there. You know, McCain is right to some extent. It's a gas station. It's masquerading as a country. I'm not denigrating the Russian people, because I think they're really educated, smart, hardworking people. But they're not being well served by their government, which is obvious. And Putin has to be, just contained.
No, that's the God's honest truth. And I'm looking at some of my notes about questions I was going to ask you. And we were talking about, ourselves doing our own oil reserves. And one of the things that was spreading across the news last year, I believe it was, the claims that fracking was causing earthquakes and changes in the weather.
My new favorite liberal term is earthquake swarms. I love it. That just makes me laugh every time I hear it. There have been instances where companies were pumping the water that they used in the fracking back down underground, and that caused some seismic activity. But, all you have to do, as you said, is follow the money. The people that made the film and financed the film, I think it was the one with Matt Damon about fracking. I can't remember the name of it right now. This is a big Hollywood leftist environmentalist movie. And the people who financed it and wrote a $15 million check was the United Arab Emirates, because they don't want us developing our own oil. They want the money to keep flowing to the Middle East. Yeah, so follow the money.
That movie was called The Green Zone, wasn't it? Or some green,
I think it was
something like that.
No, that was the one about Iraq.
Okay.
I remember the name of this one. It wasn't Gasland. It was another one. It was the one where they had you turn on your faucet and it blows up with fire. You know?
What's the reasoning then it's not reported in the media? I mean, obviously we see what's taking place. The United, if these sheikhs are donating all this cash, why isn't this all over television and just being blown up everywhere?
Well, because we have a corrupt media. Very simple answer to that. You thank God for some conservative outlets that have risen up in the last couple decades, but we have a corrupt media who has an agenda along with this government. I mean, that's patently obvious.
Yeah, you've got Al Jazeera and MSNBC reporting almost exactly the same thing. You know, we were talking about, you know, the Arab money, and it's also interesting, like you said, follow the dollar. And how all this also ties into the drug cartels coming out of Mexico, South America, Central America, and the illegal immigration coming across our borders. It's all hand in hand. It's sort of like an incestuous relationship where our enemies in the Middle East are financing and helping the drug cartels, and the drug cartels in turn are helping them smuggle terrorists across our border. And yet, then again, where is mainstream media?
Oh, yeah. You could name issue after issue on that. I mean, that's really frustrating to me. And I don't know a good way to deal with it except for, you know, I refuse to click on a New York Times article. I refuse to click on anything that's related to CNN or whatever, or MSNBC. I mean, I'm just not going to give them my click dollars, you know, or read their papers or buy their magazines or anything. I think that's the best way.
No, it's true, and it's funny because I frustrate my husband because when I turn the TV off at night, I make sure it's on a station that even though I am not physically watching, they do not get my dollars. People don't realize those little boxes that come through the satellite TV, cable TV, or whatever type of service you've got, they see what channel you leave it on. So I turned around and I said, if you got something like MASH coming on, I'm sorry, a lot of those guys, they are progressives, and I don't want my click dollars going to them. So I make sure when I turn off the TV, it's on a different station that will not play it. And they don't understand how we can really make our dollars count.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you know, this is a center-right country, and the problem is the small fringe of the leftist, extreme left, is driving the agenda, and that needs to stop. And it's all about money, and if you're seeing it. The New York Times profitability keeps going down every year. CNN's in the toilet. You know, MSNBC's in the toilet. So it's working. You know, the networks are getting less powerful. But people need to realize, you know, when you see an article about the New York Times and you click on it, and then they have the top 10 things that, you know, to lose weight in 50 minutes or whatever, and you click through all 10. I mean, you're giving them click dollars when you click all those. And New York Times is getting that money, and that helps them stay alive. And so people need to be aware of that.
I know we're winding down, but I want to throw in two quick questions to throw your way. Rupert Murdoch recently, well, a year or so ago, bought a mass amounts of the old print media. From a financial standpoint as an advisor, would you assume he bought those just to get rid of them so they don't print against him? Or does he believe that print media is kind of going to be retro and come back into shape? And also, speaking of what you said with the New York Times, with the fall of basically even the television network giants of news and newspapers, where do you see the next who's the next big NBC News or ABC News online or wherever in the world?
It's social media. That's an easy answer. It's phenomenal. Yeah, I have readers in, I think at last count, 24 countries due to all the social media networks, and that's where people are going to get their advertising. Even Fox News and the cable channels are starting to slowly wind down in growth. And as far as Murdoch's concerned, I think there'll always be a place for print. You know, he bought the Wall Street Journal and kind of turn that into a more of a you know, has a Sunday piece and weekends and all that stuff, more entertaining paper. So I don't think he's stupid. There'll always be a place there, but social media is definitely where the future is.
Well, I happen to agree with you. Before you came on, we were discussing, you know, the different outlets that we now have our show on, because now we are being broadcast in four separate outlets, not just on Blog Talk Radio, but in, you know, three other outlets. And our last show were state candidates for Michigan. And in the 2 days, the day before the show and the day of the show, my Facebook page alone had over 14,000 hits. And
I believe
the word is getting, the word is getting out there. The word is getting out there.
One of the things I'm just really happy, this isn't just in Michigan, Mr. Woods, just to point out that I think we have in our state house alone at least 25% of the incumbents being challenged by other conservative Republicans. And I know this is going on, obviously, in Wisconsin. I'm really, really glad to see people are starting to kick that moron that they declared God, Scott Walker, who's also mortgaging. That's another thing. I'm glad to see people getting involved. But what's to happen now when we see states? Even Michigan did the same thing. States starting to mortgage their future. I mean, ultimately, we as the taxpayers are the one on the loop for all this. So when Mr. or Mrs. Jones or the banker knocks on their door and says, time to ante up, I mean, what do we do when our pockets are broke? There's no money in it.
Well, you know, I spent a lot of time in Michigan through my life, and I don't know really the politics there, specifically what you're talking about. But, yeah, I mean, the states, certain states and municipalities and student loans, and, I mean, there's all kind of bills coming due. The federal government's just a small piece of that.
Well, I got to say
one
thing.
The Michigan budget, in 4 years, the Michigan budget, and Michigan is losing electoral votes, which shows it's losing population. I think we're down to 16 now. We used to have 21. Our budget has grown $1 billion each year over the last 4 years. We no longer play with millions of dollars. Chump change.
Well, Mike, you got to move here to South Carolina because there was an editorial in today's paper. One person was calling for the impeachment of Nikki Haley because she refused the Medicare expansion. But also our state legislature is going after a couple of the colleges because they were pushing this pro LGBT, whatever it is, stuff. Earlier this month, they had this one whole presentation. A person did a presentation on how to become a lesbian in 10 days at this college. And when they got wind of that, they said, ooh, I think we're going to start pulling some scholarship funds and tax dollars. And now University of South Carolina, because of some of the courses, which was strongly pro-gay, they said, no, this is not what college is here for. We're not here to teach you, you know, a sexual lifestyle. We're here to teach you to be able to function in society, in the business and economic world. Thank God South Carolina exists.
You brought up something really important, which I know we don't have a lot of time, but the colleges and universities are a cesspool of, you know, wrong thinking, and we have to try to find a way to pull the money from them too, because they keep getting all these 10% increases every year. These professors are riding on the hog of the taxpayer, and that, who's paying student loans, which are going to be forgiven by Obama. So, you know, I think these free online courses that are coming up all over the world and challenging some of these educational institutions is spot on right, and we need to focus and further that effort, I think.
Yeah, and I agree.
I think when we need to really go after whether it's Common Core or this early childhood indoctrination, I think moms and dads really need to start, or even grandmas and grandpas, aunts and uncles, I think we really need to start laying down the law, and we need to start enforcing. And that's why in Grand Rapids I'm fighting next week. We have a big income tax increase, and I'm fighting it and fighting it. Just found out, like, a bunch of construction companies, of course, we know that closed bids, so these construction companies that are pouring in thousands of dollars, they're all spending me 30 to 1. But basically it goes to show you that the city has already made deals with these construction companies. But I think we just need to completely fight all of this. If it's a citizens' revolt in large numbers, the government doesn't stand a chance.
No, we've seen that over and over recently. Yeah, for sure.
Which reminds me, as soon as I get off the air, I have to review my county council video from last night because they're trying with that sales tax referendum, and I got in front of them, and I read them the Riot Act, and it ended up being published in the newspaper, and the next thing I know, as I'm walking out, I've got a TV camera shoved in my face, and I'm on the evening news. So, yeah, we have people like
Great.
Mike and I, and there's others out there that, you know, you don't just sit behind your microphone and mouth off. You don't sit there at the bar stool and complain. You actually get out and do something. You know, contact your county council, city council, your state legislature, your federal congressman and senator, and just keep on getting your voice out there, because sooner or later, they're going to hear our message. And like I said, I posted that No Rhino petition up on Ryan Priebus's website on his Facebook page, and I'm sure if anyone goes over there, and they'll see it from Southern Sense as well as from No Rhino 2016, where I basically told them, hey, you know, conservative movements is not just black, Asian, Hispanic. We're not just male or female. We're not just old or young. We're everyone. We're everywhere. So stop trying to divide us by saying, I'm going after the Hispanic vote. Go after all of our votes, because it's the principle. And it's like Martin Luther King said, judge us by the content of our character, not by the color of our skin. Judge us by our conservative values and principles and not by what our background is. And I think that's where we're going to win the fight.
Great point.
Yeah, well, of course, with politicians and these type of business people, it's do as I say, not as I do. We all know that's true. Oh, man, what a great show. Andy, we got like 4 minutes left. Oh, Mr. Woods, you rock it. Every time you're on the show, it's like we should have someone in the airport tie you down to the chair for an extra hour.
Maybe we should make him a regular visitor, because I think this is your fourth visit to us.
Something like that. I mean, let me just be selfishly plug my books. I'd love for people to take a look at my website, ltodwood.com, and start with Currency and read them all. And I'll send you a signed copy if you'd like it.
Well, thanks a lot.
I just posted that link. I posted it on my Facebook as well to a couple of local conservative colleges in Grand Rapids, Calvin College as well as Hope College.
Great. Thank you very much. Conservatives
you,
need to help each other out.
Yes. Thank you.
Do.
Have a safe flight, and God bless.
Thanks, guys. I'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Man, that hour and a half went by fast.
Absolutely.
Why, yes, it did.
Absolutely.
Thomas, real quick, Annie, before we got to bounce, Thomas, how's everything going?
Well, let's see. 6 p.m. Central Time, 7 Eastern, Krista and Michael Branch is on the Visible Conservative Show tonight.
All right. Well, post that link up in the chat room, Thomas, and we'll try to pop in if we're not too tied up tonight. But we've got possibly we're going to have our candidate for Lieutenant Governor, Ray Moore, returning. He did a little dust-up and ended up in the Huffington Post. So hopefully we'll have him on Friday. If not, we'll just do another No Rhino run. And then next week we have Andy Limbaugh. And, yes, you recognize the last name. He is a cousin, first cousin to Rush Limbaugh. And he's got a new voters initiative out there and a fantastic website. We're going to be talking about that and upcoming elections. And later on this month, we've got Doug Briney coming back with a brand new release. And he's going to release Memorial Day weekend. And he's going to let us pre-release it. So we're going to scoop once again the music industry with a brand new release. Half of the proceeds will go to disabled military veterans. So we've got some great shows lined up. And I know I'm missing a bunch of them. We also have a Stealth Jihad show coming up later on this month and another new book release by a college professor. So we're going to have a lot of stuff coming up, Mike. We're going to have a lot of rocking and rolling.
Do this, Annie. Let's make it happen.
All right. Well, I want to thank everyone that joined us in the chat room, our friend Anna in Spain, John, Kel, Thomas, Vito. Moving was here, and I'm sure I'm missing a bunch of others. John Public, and we'll see you back here again on Friday. Same bat time, same bat station. Until then, good night. God bless.
If you find
be safe.
Yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.web.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio, and Freedom Media Network. Southern sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American. Stand up, let's make it loud, Americans.